go explain evolution to the monkeys.
God damn you all!
Welcome back, all you space monkeys, to another episode of Cinema D'Amore. I am one of your hosts, Justin Morgan. I'm here with
Chuck Phillips.
And we are getting to the end of our Planet of the Apes saga, marathon, watchathon. We are on Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, the eighth film overall, and the second in this new Apes trilogy. I don't know what to call it besides the new Apes trilogy.
I mean, that's all you can call it for now until, you know, hopefully, I would hope that we get a fourth film, but, and maybe even a fifth film and, you know, continue on in that direction. But I'm really holding out for that Beneath remake. So, you know, if we keep the timeline going the way they're setting it up, I guess that might be movie number five. Maybe we'll get then that's when they blow up the Earth and that ends the whole thing, or they come up with some other reasoning. But
my only wish is that they don't jump straight into remaking Planet of the Apes all over again. I don't know what their idea for four is, but they made it sound like it was going to start to get into the original's plot.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about that more when we get to War.
On our next episode.
That makes more sense to talk about it after the third.
It's only speculation, really.
Yeah.
What do we know? We had a director and a writer, I think, and Matt Reeves was producing it or something. So, and then that was before the pandemic. So, I don't know.
Speaking of pandemics, that's like the entire start of this film is going over, you know, just what happened after that damn pilot went and infected the entire world.
Honestly, Steph sat there and watched probably 95% of this movie with me, and that's how it started, and it was sort of like a gut punch for how realistic it is to exactly what happened to us. This was 2014 that they shot this, or that this premiered, like it's television, and a couple years later we have an actual pandemic that worked too similarly, way too close. Yeah. But I do like the opening is nice because it plays off the end of the original movie where they just had that graphic of the simian flu going over and taking over. And this was the same thing, but with extra like footage, and it was more somber and there was something more eerie. I thought it was way more eerie when it got to the end of all the news clips and stuff like that. And it just, like, all the lights went out, and it was just showing the United States with no lights at all.
Yeah, it's interesting. The way they set it up later in the film, what's his name, Carver? I think Kirk Acevedo's character.
Yeah.
And their discussions exactly like, well, where did it start? And they're like, it started in a lab. Well, but it's the apes' fault. And he's like, oh, it's not the apes' fault, which is exactly like people nowadays that are talking about the coronavirus. Oh, it was a bat. Oh, it could have been made in a lab. We don't know. And you get all those conspiracy theories going on.
Yeah, or that, like, heavily blaming the Chinese or something.
Yeah.
As if the entire country together got on that idea of making this virus that was going to wipe out most of them, too. I like the whole way this entire movie plays out. It's the most somber. It's more emotional, I would say, than the first one. And by first, I mean Rise. I don't hate James Franco, but I feel the cast is even stronger in this one. I really like Jason Clarke and Gary Oldman. He's pretty much good in everything. But he really reminded me of a Jim Gordon type. Like, he just felt like Jim Gordon in a different movie.
If Jim Gordon survived the apocalypse.
Right. I also think, and I think it's because this movie came out the year after Last of Us came out, but I have such strong Last of Us vibes.
I was going to say that. I had the exact same thought while I was watching it last night is man, like the way they live, the way they depict how their society is, like, I guess, you know, replace simian flu with, what do they call it in Last of Us? I know they turn into clickers is what they call them, but I don't remember what they called the, like if they had a name for the infection.
They do.
I can't think of what it is.
Spores, yeah, or whatever spores, you want to call it.
Yeah. But it's like if you just replace that one thing, but yeah, like looking at their society and like the people go out in little groups just like to scout out, like reminded me a lot of Last of Us and Last of Us 2. Like I had the exact same thought when I was watching this.
Yeah, and when we get into the war, like it feels like it too. Like it feels more like the second one, which is really weird because that game came out a couple years after the war was released. But yeah, even the way that Gary Oldman's character is talking about, you know, we need to get electricity to get this. We got to get that dam running, which there is a dam in Last of Us that they also get running. But it's the same thing where it's their connection to the outside world. And if they can get that, and then there's like, I guess the apes are the closest to, I forget what they're called in the game too, but there's like people that are dangerous that they're afraid of, that they're trying to keep out.
Yeah. I do like how they set everything up. I do enjoy, I think even more than just those two characters, like you're talking about Jason Clarke and Gary Oldman, but I think all the main characters in this are good. Kerry Russell's good. That kid from The Road. That's the only other movie I ever remember him from.
Or now I remember, I think of him as Young Nightcrawler.
Oh yeah, that's right. He was Young Nightcrawler. I couldn't think of another movie. He was in that movie Alpha that came out like a couple years ago.
They advertised for like 2 years before it came out.
Where he's like a prehistoric kid, like domesticating the first dog or something like that, I think was the plot. But I think they're all good. And I do like that really when you watch this, and I feel like I haven't watched this probably since War came out, because I probably rewatched this before War came out. That like Gary Oldman isn't, like he isn't, I guess, your typical villain. Like he doesn't seem like he sets out right off the bat. I
also think there is a typical villain in this.
He isn't. Like he doesn't set out to really like kill them. He's just trying to keep everything together. And he kind of tells Jason Clarke, like, basically, it's just out of desperation. Like, if they don't leave, we can't do anything. Like, we're going to have to go up there and kill them all if you can't make this work. And even, you know, not to get completely to the end, but when they do get the dam up and running and they get the power back on, it really doesn't seem like Gary Oldman cares about the apes at that point. He's just like super happy that their society is going to work and they're communicating. It is the apes that push him to where he gets to towards the end of the film. But again, I don't want to jump too far ahead. There's some other good moments before that.
I think that's fair. But I feel like there's complexity in almost every character that is bad in this movie. It's not good and evil. They're all shades of gray as far as characters go.
Except maybe Kirk Acevedo. I feel like he's just he's like a pre-Trump guy. Like he's all about the guns. He doesn't trust anybody. He maybe doesn't have that complexity. He 100% just hates apes.
Well, I also feel like something happened to him. You know, he might be the Trump guy, but I because they basically said that they need him. He's the guy that knows the dam better than anyone else or something, right? Is that what they say? Yeah, he's the only one that knows the dam, and he's the hothead of the group. And I just feel like that guy, as many guns as he's pulled on people, that if they don't want him to have a gun, they should just pat the damn guy down. I don't understand why they let him go on to be such a problem. Especially because he seems to have ruined things like 3 times. But when he has that moment where he's just like, oh, I guess I'm the asshole, which he is the asshole, but you don't really know what happened to him beforehand. I don't feel like if he was that loose of a cannon that they would have just kept him in that place, but
yeah.
But as far as complexity goes, it's really good because right off the bat, he shoots one of the apes and then they have to have him around. So it kind of complicates things overall. It complicates things for Caesar, who is trying to have peace. They've built up kind of their ape city, and they're just trying to live their lives as free as they can, and he's doing his best to avoid war. And then you have Koba, who is probably the second biggest ape in the in this ape city.
And I mean, I think Maurice is pretty big. I mean, he's large. Have you seen him?
Yeah, I wouldn't actually, like, if I saw him in real life, I'd be afraid of him for sure. I'd be afraid of Maurice. He's like a bull.
The funny thing too, I was looking up the cast after we watched the last film, and like, obviously Andy Serkis plays Caesar. It's somebody else that plays Koba in the first film. It's not the same. It's not the same actor, because Toby Kebbell plays him in the second film. But it's just like I think it's just like a regular voice actor, motion cap guy that plays him in the first film. But it's the same actors that play Rocket and Maurice for all three films as well. Which the person that plays Maurice is the clerk that yells at James Franco, which is just funny. Like, cause she looks like when you see her on screen, she's like this real small lady, but then she's playing Maurice, who's this very large, slow orangutan. But like, I don't know. That was just a funny thing when I found out that that's who mocaps for Maurice is just this like tiny lady.
That is one of the things that after we recorded Rise, I said, fuck, I forgot to talk about that. Because I think I looked them up, and then it dawned on me when it dawned on me. Oh, there we go. As soon as he got to that window, and I'm like, that's the person who plays Maurice. But what I was going to say was that Koba is having trouble following Caesar and the way that he has been treated from, you know, how humans have treated him so poorly this entire time. And he's trying really hard to understand where Caesar's coming from. So even though as the story progresses and pushes him, I think kind of rightfully so, in the direction of straight up villain because of this character that shoots Ash, which is Rocket's son. Almost everybody has a kid now. And, you know, Caesar's kind of like struggling between it was an accident and he's getting called like a human lover, which he kind of is, which I think he's also struggling with that concept of is he really doing the best job he can as a leader looking out for his own people, or is he like maybe giving them too much of a benefit of a doubt?
Yeah. Koba's definitely, like, I guess the way they kind of, we talked about it in the last episode, the previous film Rise is definitely pretty much like conquest of the Planet of the Apes. And this is definitely battle in, you know, most of the plot basics, with Koba pretty much being the Aldo character. They just kind of swap those around, all the way down to him killing Ape, which is against the law. He's the only one that does that. So they definitely have that comparison with him.
Hey, they have Maurice teaching the class where it says Ape does not kill Ape.
Yeah. So I do think that's interesting. And it, so basically is kind of the same relationship from the first, or not from the first, from Battle to this film, that you get Caesar versus Aldo, where the Koba, just like Aldo, kind of has that, you know, why do you like humans? Like, we should just get rid of them entirely. They're all bad. You know, they're terrible. They're not worth keeping around for any reason. So I do like that they continue. Again, they don't flat out copy the original films from the original series, but they just keep like echoing those same things, like having characters that are kind of like mirrored from each other. And obviously Caesar has a right hand orangutan. He has Virgil in Battle in this series. He obviously has Maurice, that's kind of like, I don't know, seems to like act like his conscience, you know, when he's like really struggling with what to do, or, you know, if this is the right decision. He kind of always goes to Maurice to, you know, confirm whether he thinks he's doing the right thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And now here's where I don't want to say struggle. I can't pinpoint it. This film, right off the bat, is so much better than Rise. And I like Rise. And I think it's because it takes its time with these characters. And I feel like that is why it can echo Battle without feeling like it's ripping Battle off, because Battle has so many things that it struggled with, and this came off of a successful film, had a bigger budget, technology was in its favor. I mean, especially when you watch, you know, Rise, Dawn, War, they look better and better and better. I mean, there's some shots that are iffy here and there, but holy shit, how amazing they look by that last movie. Not, and I mean, that's not everything, but Caesar, I mean, if you want to put it to Andy Serkis's performance, he doesn't do much. He's able to act like an actor does that's on camera. He can be very subtle when it picks up his emotions. And even when he's stern, you feel what this character is feeling. And I think that's another powerful thing with this movie. Especially, I mean, between this one and War, it is very heavy in the visuals. It doesn't rely on almost any narrative that's in dialogue. Even if you get the sign language, and, you know, they do have a few lines that they communicate, I feel if you muted this, you would still have a very good idea of you'd probably almost get the entire movie as to what was going on if you didn't know what they were saying ever.
You might not understand that scene where they're listening to the band. That'd be the only scene you're like, everyone looks so happy at that gas station. I don't get it. But yeah, speaking of like how you brought up dialogue, I do enjoy the way that they play with, I feel like they do a better job than they do in the original series of, like, it's a slow evolution towards getting them. Like in between Conquest and Battle, they like instantly they all speak. They're all able to do all the things that Caesar does. They somehow like instantly evolve like 10 years later. Whereas this plays,
this is it, also 10 years later.
This is 10 years later. Yeah. They play it more, I guess I would say, I don't want to say realistic since it's obviously science fiction, but more naturalistic in the way that you would think about it of Caesar's still like the only one that talks a lot. You get some lines every once in a while from Koba. His son says a few lines at some point to him. And then Maurice has his only line in the whole film, which is one of my favorite scenes when he just looks at the humans and just says, run.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the best moments. But I
Caesar's good too, because for being his voice is very particular, where I'm sure it's a choice. He sounds like he's struggling to speak. Like his vocal cords were never made for speaking. So he's always got that really gruff sound to him. And he always struggles with, if you see like future speech with some of the other apes, he always breaks his words up like as if he has to really focus to say them.
Yeah. They play that better. Like I said, they play that better in this film. And I enjoy the way they depict the relationships between the whole ape community, the way they build it up. It feels a lot, like I said, a lot more realistic. They go into the woods off of San Francisco and they kind of have this tree hut community there. Whereas again, if you watch like Battle, they have like actual tree houses that are like, look like they were made with 2x4s and,
hey, we said they had people feet.
It's true.
They didn't have monkey feet. And that's everything. Yeah, some of this stuff, too, there's, like, I imagine it's a real set. But when you have Jason Clarke's character, Malcolm, who's going back in desperation to try to work something out with Caesar, and he's walking through all of the, like, torn down woods, like a try to be like a human deterrent or something like that. It looks good. It tells you a story of like what they've been going through. And I think that they say in this too, that they haven't seen, they haven't seen people for 2 years.
Yeah.
Nobody's bothered them for that long. And I also kind of like how you said they're still in San Francisco. They're in the Redwoods. They haven't went any farther than where they left the beginning of the movie. They just kind of Rise. They just stuck there and built up their lives.
Yeah. Then again, another echo that they kind of play off battle, showing when Koba goes to the armory, because he's still very suspicious of the humans, even after Caesar says that he trusts them, and he sees those two guys shooting the guns, and like just like Aldo, he realizes that guns are power, and if you have guns, you have all the power, which again mirrors battle very perfectly. And those scenes are great, and I love the way that they play with Koba, like being subtle, because he never comes off as a subtle character. He's always like, when he interacts with Caesar, he's very forceful and says what's on his mind. So those scenes when he sneaks up on the guys at the test range there, and you know, plays the goofy chimpanzee that wants to drink alcohol and dance around and, you know, get playful. He doesn't just immediately kill them. He like really has to sneak up on them. I like the way they play those scenes, and I think the fact that they had Toby Kebbell come in, and I'm assuming he learned a lot from Andy Serkis, but I guess just having an actual, I don't want to say an actual actor, as if like Andy Serkis isn't a real actor, but bringing in someone that isn't just someone that sits behind mocap or like makeup all the time to come in and give a performance for something like that, I think helped.
Koba's scene's interesting too, because he's got two scenes with those guys. And the first, he uses that, he plays the dumb ape so he can make his escape and get back and try to convince Caesar, which he's unable to do. And the second time, it's sort of when he's power hungry and he is going back. But both scenes are great. Like, I love the scene where he puts his hands up and they're like, oh, he understands us. And then he just starts doing somersaults. Like, that's such a great scene. And it also kind of shows that he is manipulative. I mean, we already know it, I think, by that point, because he's already kind of been manipulating Blue Eyes, I believe, is Caesar's son's name, where, you know, the way he's manipulating him is, I'm looking out for your dad. I'm looking out for the apes. And, you know, he's a good ape, but we gotta have his back too. We gotta watch out for him.
He's the cool uncle that goes, Scar's a real cool man.
He kind of is like Scar in general, if you want to put that from Lion King, if you want to connect those two things together. Although he doesn't come off as evil. He's just kind of like a, unfortunately, very ugly looking ape. He is the scariest ape of all. So it's only natural he became the villain.
Yeah, there was nowhere else for him to go after. Once they designed him in Rise, it's like, nope, he has to be the villain. With a face like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing that seems like, I don't know, I don't really think it is too much of a step too far, but they also have the plot with Caesar's wife, who's sick, and when Carrie Russell sees it, she's like, oh, I'll give him antibiotics, and it kind of like puts the trust back into the humans again for Caesar, and it helps save his wife, who's, you know, dying. Who's giving birth to a new son. But I felt like that was the only thing that was like maybe a bit like of things happening at the same time, like convenient. But I'll give it to them, because the most part, I think things work out so beautifully, particularly the scene where the humans are actually kind of getting along well with Caesar's son, and they're all excited to see him. And it goes into the case, and it's about to see the shotgun, and just like, it's just like a good way to build this, like this moment of relief that you get almost in a horror film, where it's just like, you feel like, oh, things are working out for them. And it's just a matter of probably 30 seconds before this big fight breaks out and they fucked up again. And the guy had a shotgun. It was cool to see Caesar hold that shotgun for a second. Look like a badass.
He always looks like a badass, especially when he's riding a horse, which we got lots of ape on horse action in this film.
Oh yeah, we did. Even the gorilla. I'm like, I don't even, can a gorilla be on a horse? without hurting it. I guess horses don't get hurt.
Yeah, it was a strong one.
Yeah, it's like, is there a weight limit? Well, I mean, that's another great thing I like about this movie, too, is that Caesar is like the perfect leader in this movie. This is a great movie for trying to tackle all these obstacles that are coming your different ways and trying to hopefully keep your people as safe as you possibly can, because from the last movie, he watched that gorilla die. What's his name?
Bunk.
That's close.
What are you thinking of? I'm thinking of The Wire.
Yeah, I'm thinking of The Wire. You could tell that moment in Rise was devastating for him. And he brings it up early in the movie that they can't go to war because a lot of them are going to die. And he would rather go the peaceful route than to have all of it of his people die. But and I like when he shows up and they all get to see the speaking ape, which is kind of like a legend to them. It's almost like Bigfoot. They know that that ape attack was real and the simian flu happened, obviously. But their talking ape thing is this big myth, and that there's this smart ape that's out in the woods. And I just like how he negotiates that, like, you know, this is my home, this is your home, don't come back into my home. And they look serious as fuck.
Oh, he's dead serious, man. They didn't want him back in there. Yeah, was it
Carver?
What, the one that shot him?
Carver is the one that
shoots Ash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does bring up they are like a horror monsters for him, where he says something like, they don't need electricity and they're stronger than us. So, you know, all we really got is our brains, which like they're on par with us.
Yeah. He feels that, he's definitely one that feels that the apes should just all be destroyed. And yeah, who knows? I don't know what his past is. We get a little bit of, Kerry Russell. It's just kind of discussed for a lot of these characters. They don't go into like flashbacks. I think another thing that made me think of Last of Us was the way that Kerry Russell and Jason Clarke almost like just out of necessity are kind of together as a family. It seems like he obviously lost his wife and, Cody Smith McPhee's his kid, and she lost her daughter, then maybe her husband if she had a husband before that. So they're kind of
Joel and he is the kid is Ellie.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just there together because they don't have anyone else to go to. And we get that moment later on, which I kind of was watching some of the behind the scenes where they were talking about the making of the film, and the writers kind of talked about like working with Matt Reeves. And it did sound like, I don't know, nothing against Rupert Wyatt, who directed the first film, although I've never seen anything else he's ever directed. But they were all like, oh yeah, Matt was great. He loves Planet of the Apes. It was like his favorite movie series when he was a kid. So he's like obsessed with Planet of the Apes and loves everything about it. And, but they brought up like a lot of the good moments that kind of the way you were saying it, like slowly unfolds. It's not just all action all the time and just like characters talking to each other and, you know, explaining the plot with a lot of exposition. But that great moment of Gary Oldman, like, you know, going through his iPad and like when he gets the power turned back on and he can like see the pictures of his family and stuff like that, which is a great moment that has nothing to do with the main story, but it just adds to his character of, you know, why he wants to continue on. He's the last one left. He lost his entire family.
I also kind of like that moment because the next one is him back to business. Like, he did it in the privacy of his own room, got himself together, and it's just a side that he doesn't show anybody else. Even though he doesn't seem like an extremely ruthless character. You're right. When they get the power back on, obviously, he thinks everything's good with the apes. He's not concerned. He's genuinely surprised when they're under attack. And then they also use that one character to push his story where he tells them that everything's going to be all right. And within like 10 minutes of being attacked, that guy's dead. So he's a liar, I guess, or will feel terrible. But I do really, really like Jason Clarke's character in this because he, from the from the get-go, totally respects the apes. Like, he sees them as equals. And he's one of the only characters that really kind of sees them as equals. Everybody that's with him, like his son and Carrie Russell, like, they kind of all do over time. Because they're kind of, like, trusting him. He's leading them. Obviously, it doesn't work for all the characters, but he also is a really good embodiment of the audience, how he brought up in Rise, you're totally for these apes taking over. You're totally on their side. And it kind of gets to that point, too, where he sees them as, you know, generally peaceful beings and understands that they want their freedom, and he wants to coexist with them the best that they can. And you don't really have another character like that at all. And it also, that's another one that I think kind of like pushes Caesar into his trust for people, is that he's meeting another essentially good human being.
Yeah. It's a really good scene where they tie it back to the previous film, Rise, when he looks at the camera footage and he's able to watch James Franco teaching him when he was young. And yeah, when he tells Jason Clarke, oh, he was a good man just like you. I do like that they kind of keep that connectivity between those two films with going back to James Franco there, even though he said it wasn't the movie that he thought he was making. But
hey, he didn't even know he was in this one.
Yeah.
I do like, too, I think it's really clever. This is me. This is where my mind is like, good job. Good job, set designers. Good job, writers. When they go back to James Franco's home, Caesar's childhood home, I guess, and they find the camcorder, it's plugged in, so it recharged when the power came back on. And I was like, that's pretty clever. Instead of him just finding a thing and the battery just happens to work.
Yeah, like how they do it in like every other movie where, oh, this just happens to still have battery power.
Yeah, it's like in a cave for a million years and still works. I like, too, how on his rock in the place, it still has that symbol of the window, which is his symbol for his, I guess, tribe, if that's what you want to call his community. Because then it ends up, when there's that uprising, it's kind of what's used to be like Caesar's back. You know, we're separate. We're our own thing.
Yeah. I enjoy the small moments in this, like the way they shoot a very few specific scenes. I really love the way they film, like when the power comes back on and all the apes are back in their like village area. And I don't know that they're necessarily celebrating, but like Caesar's wife's healthy and she comes out with the baby. And that's after Koba gets the guns and he's sitting in the tree, like kind of off in the distance. And just that moment when Caesar makes eye contact with him right before he shoots him, which I feel like is the first time that there has been like a connection between the name Caesar. Is that like, mm-hmm. 'Cause that's a very much like a, like that's his Brutus. Like, you know, that was like his number one trusted guy. And he just looks off in the distance just right as he shoots him and then falls down.
Yeah, I don't know if that came in like subconsciously, but that's my same thought. I'm like, this is as close to his namesake as he's gonna get.
Yeah, so I do really like that. Two other moments I really enjoy the way they shot them is the kind of when you're saying the uprising or when they break out, the ones that opposed Koba or were more loyal to Caesar. I just love the way that moment of they get all the apes over and start attacking them and holding them. And then just they keep like rocking back and forth, hitting the bus and just like rolling the whole thing over on them. And the way they do the assault on the city when Koba first rides in, when he attacks the tank and it's just that fixed camera position on the turret and it keeps spinning around because no one's really controlling it. And every time it spins around, they're like a little closer to the city. They keep getting closer and then it rams through the doors.
It also does that thing, that moment that you loved from Tim Burton's remake, which is he plays around with the gun till he figures it out.
Yeah, he does. I'm trying to think. I think there was another Tim Burton moment, but think I forgot it at this
probably
point.
Probably when he jumped on a horse.
Again, we always got to have apes on horses. That never gets old. That's the ultimate sign
of evolution.
I do
like when
evolution.
He picks up that second gun and he starts going in there. And it is like a action hero moment where he just goes guns a-blazing and he kind of pulls it off somehow. But he also does have that moment, too, before where you feel like maybe there's still some sort of, like, humanity in him, if I can use that word for an ape. When, I don't know the character, but that one ape's like, we basically, like, we did it. We overrun them. And then he gets blown up. And Koba has that brief reaction of, like, oh, fuck. But then he gets his gun and he just keeps pushing forward. I mean, I guess he's the one that technically gets them in because the tank's the one that busts the door, but it seems like it's an accident more than him steering it. He just kind of like took it over and happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, he loses. It's almost like you were saying his humanity, but I guess in the view of Caesar, that's when he starts embracing his humanity is when he's attacking the compound and he starts to lose the ideals that he's built up in the ape community, especially when he finally actually kills Ash, because he wants him to kill the other humans that are there, and no one else wants to do it, so he grabs him and throws him off a balcony, which leads to the final confrontation, or gets us there. And I do enjoy Caesar's lines, like, Koba belongs in a cage, and,
That's some smack talking right there.
And when he finally tells him Koba is not ape.
Well, before the final battle, too, we have that moment where he kind of tests Caesar in the dam, and they end up fighting, and Caesar's way stronger, and he takes him down fairly easily. And now Caesar's injured, and one of the few times that they are very expository is where Chase and Clark basically goes in to find medicine for Caesar and also comes back with Blue Eyes. And Blue Eyes, like, all they have to do is see you. And Caesar's like, it's not that simple because we're apes and they're going to see I'm weak. And if I'm weak, they're not going to want to follow me. So I kind of like that idea, too, of him. Well, when they finally do get to the climax where they're going to fight, they're kind of, I mean, I guess it would be a boring action movie if he was like really on Koba's level, but he's kind of below Koba's level when they have that final fight because he's already injured. And it really sucks too when you're watching him like punch him in his wound.
Yeah, it's, it definitely, like, it kind of calls back to the first film when he has to fight Rocket. And he kind of has to outsmart him because at that point, he's not as strong. He's still learning. He's still a young ape. Rocket's kind of the one that pushes him around. And so he figures out a way to outsmart him and trick him into going outside and getting Buck the Gorilla to help him. But, you know, that kind of goes back to that of, yeah, you have to show your dominance. It can't just be, you can't have like two co-leaders or, you know, just say, oh, now I'm back. Like, everything will go back to normal.
Hey, and if you want to talk about subtlety, when Caesar beats Koba the first time, and they do that, like, please accept me hand gesture, it's so subtle where he just, like, when Caesar touches him, it's like he quickly pulls away, like, I got what I want. And it's very disrespectful, but, or the bare minimum of respect, I guess. It's a good, it explains his character perfectly. I also like in this movie, and it goes into the next, Michael Giacchino's score, which kind of harkens back to that Jerry Goldsmith music. The only time where he really does a good job of blending even the music that you hear in Rise into the old music to kind of go back and forth between them. And I even like the music in the beginning when they're hunting the elk, and it literally just sounds like the music from 2001. Like, it's obviously meant to be more operatic.
Yeah, it's a great moment. I would agree. I don't even know. I guess it was just because I'm not sure who did the score for the first film, but the music in this one did feel more memorable to me. Like, or it stood out.
I want to say Patrick Doyle was his name.
Could be. It wasn't anyone that I
don't think I recognized. That's why I remember it. It was Patrick Doyle.
It's just one of those throwaway names, but yeah.
He didn't do bad, but he was like a Hans Zimmer copycat.
Yeah. Kinda. I know there's a few like that. What's his name? Henry Jackman. He does a lot of scores. He does like, he's done like the most recent X-Men films. And I get the same thing. Like, none of his scores are memorable to me. They kind of like you were saying, they all just feel like Hans Zimmer, bigger. It has to be more.
Hey, ever since he did the score to Inception, I feel like that's been the like most ripped off score since. Especially Rise, because Rise was the next year. And they had more like moments of letting it breathe. So Rupert Wyatt, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he did a pretty good job with that movie. I don't really know what else he did I don't really know what else other movies he made. But it sounds like you're kind of disrespecting Rise somewhat. But Rise is a good movie, and Dawn is probably as perfect of a Apes movie as you're going to get. And I honestly think from watching this entire series, watching them all again, it kind of like solidifies my idea that this new trilogy are probably the best films in it. Like, everything builds up. I like all of them. I've already said that. But the original Planet of the Apes, all the sequels that follow, and how you pointed out the remake, like, and whatever you want to call this, the Apes trilogy remix, when they do the remix, they do a wonderful job of not overemphasizing what they really don't need to. Maybe besides the simian flu in the very first movie. But like, almost all the exposition goes out the door in the second one. And it's just like, I'm almost so impressed that this is like a 2-hour movie. Like, it's tight. It doesn't feel as tight as it is, but like, it might also help that there are those moments where they're quiet, or they have to use sign language, so you really have to watch to see what they're saying. So it's definitely one of those movies that you can't be in your cell phone and just casually watch. You'll have no idea what the hell's going on. It's a prime example of just turn your phone off when you watch a movie. Or, as I remember when we saw this in theaters and Chris yelled, he screamed
lose
for
the
somebody
phone.
To turn... Yeah, he screamed for somebody to lose the phone during the quietest moment in the movie, and I jumped like 40 feet. I was like not expecting that. I didn't even see a phone. Although I respect that. Somebody's going to be yelling in a movie theater, they might as well be yelling at somebody to turn their phone off.
I think that's just showing how great of a movie this was, is you were so deep into it, you didn't even notice the guy with the phone. You were just sucked in and, you know, couldn't take your eyes off the screen.
It was like I think it was like a subtle moment where they were in Ape City, and maybe it was like Caesar's son. He was seeing his son for the first time, so it's just completely quiet. And then somebody right next to me just screams at the top of their lungs to lose the phone. I'm like, ah!
Yeah, and that was a packed theater, too. Like, every single seat was full, because we saw it on, opening night.
It is kind of a side story, but I will say intimidation's the best way to go if you can when you're in a theater and somebody's talking or on a phone, because there's no good movie theater, or I'd say they're very rare, where a theater actually will go in and make sure people aren't talking or on their phones. So at least make them afraid. I don't know. Make them scared.
So who's your favorite ape in this film?
I think it's kind of a cheat. I think I'm going to have to go with Koba. I think he's a really well built up villain. I mean, I kind of really just like Maurice in every moment he's in. And I think obviously the story is stronger with our protagonist Caesar. But since this is the Koba movie, and I really do like the build up to him. And I think that he's a really good villain. I don't know why it always seems like your hero always has to face, like, your doppelganger, your, like, evil doppelganger, which is essentially what Koba is. But, yeah, he's also, like, a product of Caesar. Like, he's tried following Caesar, and he, like, I believe Caesar even says that, you know, this is still his fault. Like, he didn't see what was going on. So you can't just blame Koba. It's his fault too, which is like the best moment that a leader can have. I mean, Caesar has better leader moments in this movie than most war movies. But Koba for me just kind of wins me over, like, cuz you do have that complexity of, you know, don't judge a book by its cover, where he does a lot of good things throughout the first half of the movie before he's fed up. And, I mean, what's the moments where he's outright violent, when he kills those guys to steal the guns? And, I mean, after the uprising, when he doesn't care about the people, you think, oh, maybe he might, I mean, maybe you don't think it, but he only cares about the apes, and then he's willing to sacrifice Ash, so he only cares about himself, like he's kind of went mad, or he's just done with the rules. So, yeah, he'd be my favorite ape. He'd be my favorite character. I like him more than the people, too. What about you?
Yeah, I'd probably have to say the same. Yeah, he's just so interesting. And, yeah, he doesn't come off as just, I don't want to say just generic. Like, they set him up from the first film. You know, they could have had any ape, but it feels like they specifically designed him to be, you know, he has all those scars and marks, and, like, one of his eyes is blind. Even in the first film, when they show him of, you know, he's been in so many labs, he's the one that's the most eager to get the treats, because he knows, you know, the one that gets the treats and performs well, you know, they'll give you things. So the way they set him up, that I don't want to say it's not his fault, like kind of how you said, like Caesar says he blames himself for not seeing it, but, you know, it's just the way that he's been treated. You know, it's kind of that, what else would you expect from him? He's never had humans treat him well. And Maurice kind of says the same thing, but I guess maybe Maurice is just older and wiser, that you know, when he asks Caesar, do you still think about humans, and Caesar tells him yes, and Maurice says, I never saw the good side of humans, you did. So that makes a big difference in how they perceive things, that if Koba's never seen humans be kind and nice to him, you know, what other expectation would you have? He's going to think they're all evil and they all want to hurt him all the time.
He feels that they're going to lie to him. So I don't think he calls the humans liars. And then whenever they have that gun, it kind of proves his point that they are liars. And then he goes to basically, like, planting evidence and setting them up to just kind of get the apes to go his way. Which, I mean, he also burns down their home. Like, he really pushes things towards war. And he obviously doesn't care about these other apes. Like, there's a great moment, too, where in the climax where they're fighting on that skyscraper. And there's that ape that's, like, still alive, that's, like, crushed under a beam. And he lifts the beam up, like, I mean, maybe for a second you might feel like he's going to help him, but then he grabs the assault rifle off of him and drops the beam back onto the ape that's just, like, in pain, because he just went for the weapon and not to help him. I think that's, like, that is, like, a great moment. And for the most part, too, there's, like, this weird, like, honor among the apes. So when we get to the climax and they're on top of this building that is about to be detonated to just wipe them out from Gary Oldman's character, which isn't all that irrational too. He's like, we can't keep having, you know, they were under attack, people have died. And he's like, we can't have the apes being able to just keep taking us over like that. So he totally kind of is justified in what he's about to do. And Caesar's going up there to be, like, more honorable to face his opponent. And everyone has to watch him. Like, no one else is allowed to partake in it. But I also like that moment, too, where he comes out and Koba's, like, kind of shocked that he's still alive.
The final moment there is really good between Koba and Caesar, because it just shows the manipulation that Koba thinks, oh, Caesar can't kill me. You know, Caesar is the honorable ape that doesn't kill other apes. And, like, even at the end, even after he's tried to kill Caesar, killed Ash, like, done all these terrible things, he still seemingly believes that he can appeal to Caesar's, you know, morality code of, oh, you can't kill me. Ape doesn't kill ape. You said it yourself all the time.
It's a great moment.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, I brought it up earlier, but that I think might be my favorite line in the film, when Caesar just says, Koba, not ape, and then, like, tosses him off because he knows it's the only thing he can do.
And he falls the most violent way, like, to his death that he could possibly fall. He, like, falls on, like, a piece of equipment, and then it goes down with him. So it's, like, ensuring that he's, like, ultra crushed when he goes down. Yeah, it's a great moment. And that might be another thing, because he does remind me of the Scar character. And then it kind of has that Lion King vibe, too, where he's, like, hanging there. But it is good. It's a good moment, too, because Caesar basically has to reevaluate things. And down in the sewers, I kind of like that character moment that Malcolm has, where he just, like, casually gets the gun and he's like, I can't let you kill them. You know, I mean, I know I sound crazy, but they didn't mean, it wasn't that, it wasn't all of them. And he just puts that trust in him, and Gary Oldman, badass, decides to detonate him anyways, which sucks for those other guys, because I'm sure they didn't want to get blown up. And I think that, like, that final moment, the actual final moment where Caesar and Malcolm see each other, like, the last time, I really, really like, and it's simple, after they kind of part and go their different ways, Caesar's going into the light, and he goes back into the shadows, and, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of what happens to both of their species, that the humans are, they're fading away.
Yeah, that whole finale is a really great moment, and I like the way that all the apes, like, they kind of bow down, obviously, because they respect Caesar as their leader, but they do all give the gesture, like, they put their hands out, like, I guess seemingly, like, they all need to ask forgiveness of him for, you know, straying from his ways and following after Koba and taking him as their leader.
Yeah. And it also has, I don't know why, but all these feel very biblical. And I don't know if it's because the plot, it's more primitive between them. You know, like, it they all kind of have these, like, Cain and Abel, they all feel like Old Testament stories that build who they are. I mean, essentially, if you think about it, this is the Ten Commandments. You know what I mean? It's, he's going in, he's freeing his people, and at the end of the day, he's going to be this big legend that everybody talks about for centuries, which I think is the ideal way to go. But they did the perfect thing by, like, here's another thing where it's like, I don't know, sorry, better than the Ten Commandments, is because the Ten Commandments, see, I'm tying Charlton Heston back into this, is that it's very, like, to the point, like, these are the rules and you got to trust in God, and it's way more spiritual, or I would just say religious, I guess. And this one is more spiritual with the apes, because he's trying his best to do what's right for his community, and he essentially, like, rises to the top, like, he earns all of their respect. And kind of how the humans view him early as a myth that's actually real. That's kind of how this story is going with all these movies, too, is, like, you know, it is it almost Christ-like too that he gets shot, is dead, and a couple days later basically rises from the dead and takes his people back.
Yeah. I agree with the biblical aspect. That does always seem to creep into all of these Apes films in some way or another.
Even like Ape Not Kill Ape is a very testament feeling. The one testament.
It's the only law.
We only need one law. Murder is bad. Don't. It's like George Carlin.
Yeah.
It basically gets down to just don't kill people.
Yeah. I think it's just don't be an asshole. That's the only don't commandment you asshole. Need.
But yeah, they all come down to just don't be an asshole. You're muted or something.
No, sorry.
It's okay.
I hit the wrong button there. I don't think there's any other things to talk about that we missed or anything. I do agree that I feel like these films just keep getting better and better. And part of it probably is the technology. I mean, even just like I said, I was watching some of like the behind the scenes stuff, and they had parts where they would cut back and forth between Rise and Dawn. And it is almost like night and day, even though they were only a few years apart. Of like, Caesar looks great in Rise, but he just looks like 1,000 times better in Dawn. I mean, the way they like got the hair texture a lot more realistic.
And wait till you get the war.
And, like, yeah, and it gets even better.
It's another jump forward.
It's these movies keep getting better and better. And I was always a fan of the like practical costumes and makeup from the original films, but this still feels even more realistic. And like, you still get those great performances coming through, even when it's just motion capture and they're just, you know, using like a face camera or something to capture their performance, that it still really sells that you can follow a group of apes and pretty much be on their side and agree with them and have sympathy for them. That I feel like the human characters in the entire series, especially in this one and the next one, War, that it's a good balance of they're not too much or they're not too in the way of taking up the plot. They do still continue with that idea of, no, this is a Planet of the Apes film. We need to focus on the apes. The human characters are secondary.
I mean, it took the Planet of the Apes original series a little bit to figure that out. I agree with you. I love the makeup, and it's like such a classic look in those original movies. And they feel very real. Like, you just, when the acting is good, you're just believing it. And in this, I think the only benefit really comes from what they're able to do. They're able to move like actual apes are. So when you have that, I mean, Battle had that fight in the tree that, like I said in the script, probably sounded wonderful. Then when they're filming it, they're like, I don't know, we can't really film this in a tree without somebody getting hurt. They don't really even look that agile. They can't really move in these suits that well or see very well. And in this, you kind of have exactly that tree fight. They're up in a man-made structure and they're, you know, swinging from chains and stuff. And I'm sure this is kind of what the writers were hoping for when they were writing Battle, and they never got it. But overall, I think that the emotional core is what holds these last three movies together. I think Matt Reeves' movies are the best out of all of them. And obviously you got to respect the original Planet of the Apes or you wouldn't have any of this, which I think goes back to Mr. Rod Serling. So the mixture of all this just kind of makes the perfect movie.
Yeah. It is pretty perfect.
It really is. And yeah. And the only other thing is, I'd like to reiterate what you said. The subtlety, the little moments are all wonderful. You know, the moment where Malcolm's son gives Maurice the comic book because he stood up to Koba and, like, I don't know, really saved them, but at least stood up to him. So he wouldn't get hurt by him. And you see that he's like kind of like teaching him to read, which might come back in the next movie. But I like that kind of evolution. And I feel like, I don't know why, but this movie feels like every small moment matters. And everything that happens for a reason. And it almost feels like every action dictates the plot. So everything just kind of flows very naturally. And the few moments that you do have of action, like where they're invading or when Clark's character is going in for the medicine, and it's like a war scene where there's just gunfire left and right, and he's like ducking and dodging and trying to get out alive. It feels so much more intense when you're not just doing that nonstop, which anybody can see that. Like, that's, if you want to surprise people, just put one good action scene in your entire movie, and everybody will talk about it forever. And if you had that with like 10 other action scenes, no one's going to remember your movie. But Dawn, it ends at dawn. That's pretty cool, right?
It's perfect.
They were patting themselves on the back for that one, I imagine. They're like, it's the dawn of a new age. And it's actually dawn when this movie ends. I think that was another good episode. That was deep. And I feel like we could go deeper if we really thought about it and gave it more time. But I think at this point, we would just be pulling hairs.
Damn.
Yeah. Hopefully everybody's enjoying our Apes episodes. On Twitter, I'm at JJMorgan19. Chuck?
ChuckFinn66.
We're back on Friday with our final episode, War for the Planet of the Apes.
Finally coming to an end. Which is kind of
sad.
I know.
It's sad.
We've run out of apes.
We're in peak apes. We are running out of apes. One more ape. Unless we start going real obscure with apes movies that aren't Planet of the Apes movies.
We get into the TV show or the cartoon.
You know, I would love to if it wasn't so time consuming. And I feel like it would also need more than a single episode. Yeah. So it wouldn't be fair to just be like, throw it in after a battle and be like, oh, the Apes TV show. We crammed it. I think it was only a season anyway.
I think it was only like one season, maybe two, but yeah, I know it wasn't on for a
couple
long.
Hours to watch all of it. Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah, maybe. Maybe we'll add a bonus and then two people will watch it or listen to our episode that'll be interested in it. But yeah, I'm excited. I actually, this is probably, I don't know how this ends up sounding to everybody that's listening, but this is definitely one of my favorite movies that we've discussed so far. I'll say this year.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of good discussions, but this movie is just fucking way better than we deserve. I don't even know why we got such a good movie out of this. I mean, I like Rise, but this is like near perfect, and it doesn't feel like it really steals from any other mid-trilogy film, you know? Like how we were talking about the Hans Zimmer music that kind of was stolen in the first one. They didn't really go with like some crazy, like, this is Planet of the Apes, but this is the Dark Knight of Planet of the Apes. They just said this is the next step, and they tackle everything really well. And subtly, and it feels, as far as Apes movies go, the most realistic.
Yeah, I think so.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
We're Cinema D'Amore. Thank you for listening to our Planet of the Apes episodes. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It'd be greatly appreciated if you would subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.